Chapter 7. Milburn was a householder in his old district, though not in his old street, and Mrs. Milburn and their daughter had turned themselves into Londoners. Frances was well reconciled to the removal by her lover's satisfaction at the change. It suited him better to travel from Ivell 100 miles, to see her in London, where he frequently had other engagements, than 50 in the opposite direction, where nothing but herself required his presence. So here they were, furnished up to the attics, in one of the small but popular streets of the West District, in a house whose front, till lately of the complexion of a chimney sweep, had been scraped to show to the surprised wayfarer the bright yellow and red brick that had lain lurking beneath the soot of 50 years. The social lift that the two women had derived from the alliance was considerable. But when the exhilaration which accompanies a first residence in London, the sensation of standing on a pivot of the world, had passed, their lives promised to be somewhat duller than when, at despised Exonbury, they had enjoyed a nodding acquaintance with 3/4 of the town. Mr. Milburn did not criticize his wife. He could not. Whatever defects of hardness and acidity his original treatment, and the lapse of years might have developed in her, his sense of a realized idea, of a re-established self-satisfaction, was always thrown into the scale on her side, and outweighed all objections. It was about a month after their settlement in town, that the household decided to spend a week at a watering place in the Isle of Wight, and while there the Reverend Percival Cope, the young curate aforesaid, came to see them, Frances in particular. No formal engagement of the young pair had been announced as yet, but it was clear that their mutual understanding could not end in anything but marriage without grievous disappointment to one of the parties at least. Not that Frances was sentimental. She was rather of the imperious sort, indeed, and, to say all, the young girl had not fulfilled her father's expectations of her. But he hoped and worked for her welfare as sincerely as any father could do. Mr. Cope was introduced to the new head of the family, and stayed with them in the island 2 or 3 days. On the last day of his visit they decided to venture on a 2-hour sail in one of the small yachts which lay there for hire. The trip had not progressed far before all, except the curate, found that sailing in a breeze did not quite agree with them. But as he seemed to enjoy the experience, the other three bore their condition as well as they could without grimace or complaint, till the young man, observing their discomfort, gave immediate directions to tack about. On the way back to port they sat silent, facing each other. Nausea in such circumstances, like midnight watching, fatigue, trouble, fright, has this marked effect upon the countenance, that it often brings out strongly the divergences of the individual from the norm of his race, accentuating superficial peculiarities to radical distinctions. Unexpected physiognomies will uncover themselves at these times in well-known faces. The aspect becomes invested with the spectral presence of entombed and forgotten ancestors, and family lineaments of special or exclusive caste, which in ordinary moments are masked by a stereotyped expression and mien, start up with crude insistence to the view. Frances, sitting beside her mother's husband, with Mr. Cope opposite, was naturally enough much regarded by the curate during the tedious sail home, at first with sympathetic smiles. Then, as the middle-aged father and his child grew each gray-faced, as the pretty blush of Frances disintegrated into spotty stains, and the soft rotundities of her features diverged from their familiar and reposeful beauty into elemental lines, Cope was gradually struck with the resemblance between a pair in their discomfort who in their ease presented nothing to the eye in common. Mr. Milburn and Frances in their indisposition were strangely, startlingly alike. The inexplicable fact absorbed Cope's attention quite. He forgot to smile at Frances, to hold her hand, and when they touched the shore he remained sitting for some moments like a man in a trance. as they went homeward, and recovered their complexions and contours. The similarities one by one disappeared, and Francis and Mr. Milburn were again masked by the commonplace differences of sex and age. It was as if, during the voyage, a mysterious veil had been lifted, temporarily revealing a strange pantomime of the past. During the evening he said to her casually, "Is your stepfather a cousin of your mother, dear Francis?" "Oh, no," said she. "There is no relationship. He was only an old friend of hers. Why did you suppose such a thing?" He did not explain, and the next morning started to resume his duties at Ivel. Cope was an honest young fellow, and shrewd withal. At home in his quiet rooms in St. Peter's Street, Ivel, he pondered long and unpleasantly on the revelations of the cruise. The tale it told was distinct enough, and for the first time his position was an uncomfortable one. He had met the Franklands at Exonbury as parishioners, had been attracted by Francis, and had floated thus far into an engagement which was indefinite, only because of his inability to marry just yet. The Franklands' past had apparently contained mysteries, and it did not coincide with his judgment to marry into a family whose mystery was of the sort suggested. So he sat and sighed, between his reluctance to lose Francis, and his natural dislike of forming a connection with people whose antecedents would not bear the strictest investigation. A passionate lover of the old-fashioned sort might possibly never have halted to weigh these doubts, but though he was in the church, Cope's affections were fastidious, distinctly tempered with the alloys of the century's decadence. He delayed writing to Francis for some while, simply because he could not tune himself up to enthusiasm when worried by suspicions of such a kind. Meanwhile, the Milburns had returned to London, and Frances was growing anxious. In talking to her mother of Cope's, he had innocently alluded to his curious inquiry if her mother and her stepfather were connected by any tie of cousinship. Mrs. Milburn made her repeat the words. Frances did so, and watched with inquisitive eyes their effect upon her elder. "What is there so startling in his inquiry then?" she asked. "Can it have anything to do with his not writing to me?" Her mother flinched, but did not inform her, and Francis also was now drawn within the atmosphere of suspicion. That night, when standing by chance outside the chamber of her parents, she heard for the first time their voices engaged in a sharp altercation. The apple of discord had, indeed, been dropped into the house of the Milburns. The scene within the chamber door was Mrs. Milburn standing before her dressing table, looking across to her husband in the dressing room adjoining, where he was sitting down, his eyes fixed on the floor. "Why did you come and disturb my life a second time?" she harshly asked. "Why did you pester me with your conscience, till I was driven to accept you to get rid of your importunity? Francis and I were doing well. The one desire of my life was that she should marry that good young man. And now the match is broken off by your cruel interference. Why did you show yourself in my world again, and raise this scandal upon my hard-won respectability won by such weary years of labor as none will ever know?" She bent her face upon the table and wept passionately. There was no reply from Mr. Milburn. Francis lay awake nearly all that night, and when at breakfast time the next morning still no letter appeared from Mr. Cope, she entreated her mother to go to Ivel and see if the young man were ill. Mrs. Milburn went, returning the same day. Francis, anxious and haggard, met her at the station. "Was all well?" Her mother could not say it was, though he was not ill. One thing, as he had found out, that it was a mistake to hunt up a man when his inclinations were to hold aloof. Returning with her mother in the cab, Francis insisted upon knowing what the mystery was which plainly had alienated her lover. The precise words which had been spoken at the interview with him that day at Ivel Mrs. Milburn could not be induced to repeat, but thus far she admitted that the estrangement was fundamentally owing to Mr. Milburn having sought her out and married her. And why did he seek you out, and why were you obliged to marry him? Asked the distressed girl. Then the evidences pieced themselves together in her acute mind, and, her color gradually rising, she asked her mother if what they pointed to was indeed the fact. Her mother admitted that it was. A flush of mortification succeeded to the flush of shame upon the young woman's face. How could a scrupulously correct clergyman and lover like Mr. Cope ask her to be his wife after this discovery of her irregular birth? She covered her eyes with her hands in a silent despair. In the presence of Mr. Milburn they at first suppressed their anguish. But by and by their feelings got the better of them, and when he was asleep in his chair after dinner Mrs. Milburn's irritation broke out. The embittered Frances joined her in reproaching the man who had come as the specter to their intended feast of Hymen, and turned its promise to ghastly failure. Why were you so weak, mother, as to admit such an enemy to your house when so obviously your evil genius much less accept him as a husband, after so long? If you had only told me all, I could have advised you better. But I suppose I have no right to reproach him, bitter as I feel, and even though he has blighted my life forever. Francis, I did hold out. I saw it was a mistake to have any more to say to a man who had been such an unmitigated curse to me. But he would not listen. He kept on about his conscience and mine, till I was bewildered, and said yes. Bringing us away from a quiet town, where we were known and respected, what an ill-considered thing it was. Oh, the content of those days. We had society there, people in our own position, who did not expect more of us than we expected of them. Here, where there is so much, there is nothing. He said London society was so bright and brilliant, that it would be like a new world. It may be to those who are in it. But what is that to us two lonely women? We only see it flashing past. Oh, the fool that I was. Now Milburn was not so soundly asleep as to prevent his hearing these animadversions that were almost execrations, and many more of the same sort. As there was no peace for him at home, he went again to his club, where, since his reunion with Leonora, he had seldom, if ever, been seen. But the shadow of the troubles in his household interfered with his comfort here also. He could not, as formerly, settle down into his favorite chair with the evening paper, reposeful in the celibate's sense that where he was his world's center at its fixture. His world was now an ellipse, with a dual centrality, of which his own was not the major. The young curate of Ivel still held aloof, tantalizing Francis by his elusiveness. Plainly he was waiting upon events. Milburn bore the reproaches of his wife and daughter almost in silence, but by degrees he grew meditative, as if revolving a new idea. The bitter cry about blighting their existence at length became so impassioned that one day Milburn calmly proposed to return again to the country, not necessarily to Exonbury, but, if they were willing, to a little old manor house which he had found was to be let, standing a mile from Mr. Cope's town of Ivel. They were surprised, and, despite their view of him as the bringer of ill, were disposed to accede. Though I suppose, said Mrs. Milburn to him, it will end in Mr. Cope's asking you flatly about the past, and your being compelled to tell him, which may dash all my hopes for Francis. She gets more and more like you every day, particularly when she is in a bad temper. People will see you together, and notice it, and I don't know what may come of it. I don't think they will see us together, he said, but he entered into no argument when she insisted otherwise. The removal was eventually resolved on, the townhouse was disposed of, and again came the invasion by furniture men and vans, till all the movables and servants were whisked away. He sent his wife and daughter to an hotel, while this was going on, taking two or three journeys himself to Ivel to superintend the refixing and the improvement of the grounds. When all was done, he returned to them in town. The house was ready for their reception, he told them, and there only remained the journey. He accompanied them and their personal luggage to the station only, having, he said, to remain in town a short time on business with his lawyer. They went, dubious and discontented, for the much-loved cope had made no sign. If we were going down to live here alone, said Mrs. Milburn to her daughter in the train, and there was no interest of telltale presence. But let it be. The house was a lovely little place in a grove of elms, and they liked it much. The first person to call upon them as new residents was Mr. Cope. He was delighted to find that they had come so near, and, though he did not say this, meant to live in such excellent style. He had not, however, resumed the manner of a lover. Your father spoils all. Murmured Mrs. Milburn. But 3 days later she received a letter from her husband, which caused her no small degree of astonishment. It was written from Bowlen. It began with a long explanation of settlements of his property, in which he had been engaged since their departure. The chief feature in the business was that Mrs. Milburn found herself the absolute owner of a comfortable sum in personal estate, and Francis of a life interest in a larger sum, the principal to be afterwards divided amongst her children, if as he had any. The remainder of his letter ran as hereunder. I have learned that there are some derelictions of duty which cannot be blotted out by tardy accomplishment. Our evil actions do not remain isolated in the past, waiting only to be reversed. Like locomotive plants they spread and reroot, till to destroy the original stem has no material effect in killing them. I made a mistake in searching you out, I admit it. Whatever the remedy may be in such cases, it is not marriage, and the best thing for you and me is that you do not see me more. You had better not seek me, for you will not be likely to find me. You are well provided for, and we may do ourselves more harm than good by meeting again. Milburn, in short, disappeared from that day forward. But a searching inquiry would have revealed that, soon after the Milburns went to Ivel, an Englishman, who did not give the name of Milburn, took up his residence in Brussels. A man who might have been recognized by Mrs. Milburn, if as he had met him. One afternoon in the ensuing summer, when this gentleman was looking over the English papers, he saw the announcement of Miss Frances Frankland's marriage. As he had become the Reverend Mrs. Cope. Thank God! Said the gentleman. But his momentary satisfaction was far from being happiness. As he formerly had been weighted with a bad conscience, so now was he burdened with the heavy thought which oppressed Antigone, that by honorable observance of a right he had obtained for himself the reward of dishonorable laxity. Occasionally he had to be helped to Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.